This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 4, Episode 35, The Secret of Winning. Coming up on the show, we help Salmon end his 3-month losing streak. Mark Garraway talks about David Warner and strength versus endurance. And we introduce Robo Burners. All that and more on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to another Pitch Vision Academy cricket show, all your cricket coaching news and advice and information wrapped up every week. I'm David Hinchliffe. I look after things at Pitch Vision Academy, make sure the ship is running smoothly through the sea of cricket coaching. And joining me as always, well-informed co-host Mark Garraway, Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. Welcome along to the show again, Garraz.
All right, Coach, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And regular listeners will know that the third member of the team is Burners. Burners, at the moment, is not here. But don't worry, we have Robo Burners, who's going to be filling in for Real Burners. So listen out for Burners' pre-recorded information throughout the show. And you never know, Burners may turn up as the show goes on. He's that kind of a will-o'-the-wisp character.
He certainly is. And it's the way he rolls, isn't it?
It is the way he rolls. There's no doubt about it. Some would say his bowling is a bit of rolling as well, but I'm sure he'd disagree. So we've had some things happening in the world of cricket. A big name dropped by Australia, David Warner. What are your thoughts on that, Garraz?
Well, I was a bit surprised, to be honest, and not so much about the decision, I suppose, because you know his record in ODIs is probably the least impressive of all of his records. But the fear factor of the bloke is something that is definitely there. And you saw it in the test matches as well. You know, when he walked to the wicket, there was an anticipation and a fear that, you know, he could take the game away from you. And so I was surprised to see that happen. I'm also intrigued by the timing of it. I'm intrigued by the seemingly lack of structure to the selection process. And I can only assume that off the back of that one innings that Finch hit, that he's been usurped by Finch. And I'm not sure that real strong selection processes operate quite in that fashion.
Definitely. And there's a lesson there for the lower level players as well, isn't there? Because often you will find that you will get dropped and you can't quite work out what the reason was. Maybe it's for a sensible reason. Maybe it's for a less sensible reason or a non-cricketing reason even. But how you react to that is an important part of your process of becoming a better cricketer.
Oh, absolutely right. But this is where, you know, the clarity of the message it goes into David Warner in this instance, but it could be anybody, as you quite rightly say, from club cricket, schools cricket, all the way through. The information that you get when you are being left out, and we've all been left out in times, and as coaches we have to do that on a regular basis, it needs to be clean. So it needs to be something that they understand, needs to be very simple, and it needs to be attainable. There's nothing worse than being fobbed off, I suppose. And I'm not saying that's happened in this case, but I think we've all been fobbed off a bit when we've been left behind with the view of, you know, what do I do to get back in? And I always encourage my players, if they do get dropped, to come to me and say, right, now what do I need to do? And if I haven't explained that well enough in the first instance and they still want more clarity, then it's my job as a coach to provide them with that clarity and then the support which enables them to have an opportunity to reach that target.
Yeah, and of course, if the person goes away and does the things that are required of them, it's important to follow through and keep your promise.
Absolutely right, because you know trust is so important, isn't it? Trust is very important within any environment like that.
Yeah, and that's a lesson for whatever level the selection is. Whether you're a club captain picking your Saturday team, whether you're a coach of an academy and you've got to decide on your team to play against the local rivals, and you've got a player who's a little bit out of form. Whatever that situation is, it's the same theme throughout that, from the highest level right down to the most grassroots of cricket, isn't it?
Correct.
Now, the other thing that I wanted to talk about was a little bit less newsy, I suppose, but it was an interesting article on the ever-entertaining King Cricket website. which is mostly a website that talks about has a slightly askew angle on top level cricket, let's say. But it was an interesting point that he made on the site, which was that these days there's two kinds of batsmen. There's the big strong guys who can hit the ball over the ropes, and there's the endurance guys who can bat forever and aren't necessarily going to be hitting as many sixes as the big strong guys. And you kind of are seeing a move for the stronger guys to play the shorter formats and the more endurance guys to play the longer formats. And I thought that was an interesting concept. Is that something that you've seen while you've been doing your coaching, Gareth?
I thought it was a brilliant article. And it actually got me thinking in about four or five different ways through reading it, which is always the sign of a good article.
Definitely.
I just thought, I started off thinking you're talking rubbish. And then I sort of came round to actually made some really, really good points there. But the bottom line is that cricket is becoming a more physical game. He put Joe Root in that article, didn't he? And compared the Finch innings with Joe Root. And the bottom line to me is that Joe Root, if he played 20 years ago, his physicality now, let alone where he's going to go when he's properly matured and when he's had all of his training programs, is going to be bigger now than it was when he was, if he'd have played 20 years ago, because that's the way it's gone, because the game has moved on so far, because understanding of training in cricket has moved on so far, because the support structures around the players in terms of their strength and conditioning coaches have moved on so far in what is a relatively a short period of time. So everybody's going to get bigger and stronger as a result. I think the notion that you can only, we can't polarise this. You're a T20 player, so you whack it out of the park, so you have to be big. Works for some people, but not for everybody. And there was a fantastic piece on Sky Sports in the UK the other day about bat sizes and also how people play. And one of the guys that you look at the world lists in terms of the top tens that features across all of them, irrespective of format length, is Jai Wardner. Now, Jai Wardner's physicality isn't in the same league as a Warner or a Finch or a Lum, for example, who, are geared towards whacking the ball. But he still has a phenomenal record across all three. So I listened to the article. I read it. It made me think massively. And the bottom line is everybody's getting fitter because that's the way it's going.
Yep.
And we have an opportunity for cricketers to say, I can earn a living by being very, very good at this particular bit of the game. But equally, we have the opportunity of saying, I can make a living by being somebody who is incredibly fit and strong, but not specialising, that can play across all three formats, which is exactly what Rooty is going to do over the course of his career. He's going to play all three. He will get a bit bigger. He will get a bit stronger because Hugh Bevan and his team are going to work with him. But they'll do it very much with all three formats in mind, whereas somebody like Lummy is probably looking at one, maybe two formats, and that's going to indicate where he's going to go in terms of his physical development. So the flexibility has to be there when you're working with these guys. And often you need to leave that flexibility till a bit later, in order to make those decisions, because you don't want to pigeonhole somebody at the age of 15, 16. So I think everybody, it's horses for courses, but you can specialise if you want to at an appropriate stage, or you can be a Joe Root or a Jai Wardner who do a great job across all three formats. So get strong, but don't limit yourself too early is my take on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're going to be limited certainly by the physical makeup that you have, that you're born with, the genetic makeup that you have. Some guys, even the most frail of guys, can put on muscle and get stronger. Of course they can, but you're going to have some guys who are just naturally, they're built for that fast twitch stuff. The guys who are, could have been sprinters in another life, that kind of build. And you have other guys who are not that way built. Maybe they would have been marathon runners in another life. They're more built for the endurance side of things. And while you can have a crossover between those, and you should have a crossover between those, if you're playing to your strengths, then you're going to get more out of the game, I think, if you're playing to your strengths. So that's going to be an interesting area for strength and conditioning in the future, how to customize training towards the type of player that you are and the type of player that you want to be. And somebody like Joe Root isn't going to be able to smash the ball quite as much as somebody like an Aaron Finch. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be a poor 2020 player. Well, you can see by the 90 he scored recently in no time. He was, you know, that was not done with smashing lots of sixes. It was done with skill. Or finesse, I should say, rather than skill, because smashing a six isn't as much of a skill as a finessed cover drive.
Well, I think the point in terms of strength, though, is that you've got Joe Root there, who did hit sixes, and you know, throughout his career, and has hit them. But the range of his sixes is so much less than somebody like a Finch, who hit 14 or 15 in that one innings. I mean, one of the ones that he hit, he fell over, backing away outside leg, and still got it over cover for six. Well, if Joe Root falls over, then there's a good chance that's going to be out, or played and missed, or will go for one somewhere, as opposed to going over cover for six. And it's those miss hits that still go for six. The stronger player, the guy who has probably said to himself, I'm going 20-20, I'm going one day, and I'm going to train in that fashion, will get away with, whereas Joe won't do. But equally, that guy won't get the opportunity to play the ultimate form of cricket, which is Test cricket. And the interesting thing for me is, if you look at things like the IPL, predominantly, and there have been some anomalies in this, but the biggest players in the IPL that have earned the biggest amount of money, particularly in the first five editions of the IPL, were guys that were playing Test cricket, because that's the one that's on telly the most. And a lot of people make those signings based on what's on telly. Now, that's changed a bit with your Maxwells and changed a bit with your Pollards coming into play, and I'm sure it will continue to change. But, you know, Test match cricket is what it's all about, and we cannot get away from that. Finch has taken a view that he's not going to play Test match cricket, and that may or may not be the right view, but his predominant, you know, thing that brings in money, that keeps the house over the head and all of those sort of things, is going to be his ability to smack the ball out of the park. And therefore, his training programme is reflective of the environments that he wants to play in, and that is only right and proper.
Okay, we're going to finish off our introduction now with the usual yes-no round. Three questions. We can only answer yes or no to them, no matter how much more that we want to say. No robot burners for this one, so it's over to myself. I'm going to hand over to myself for Gareth to answer yes or no, and then I'll have a little pop at it after you, Gareth. So here we go. Alex Hales will always be a 2020 specialist.
No.
No. Second question. Test series should be a minimum of three games.
Yes.
No. Third question. Technology is saving spin bowling.
Yes.
No. Time now for us to enter the mailbag. Of course, every week there's two questions. The best question of the week, as well as getting answered on the show, wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you want to get in touch with the show in order to send your question in, the contact details are available on the Pitch Vision Academy website. Or you can just send us an email. It's coach@pitchvision.com. Or we have a answering machine which can answer your questions automatically, and then we can read them out on the show. So you can give us a ring on the UK number, which is 0203 239 7543. There are also international numbers available on the website, or you can just use Skype to give us a call and just plonk a 44 in front of that number, however you want to get in touch with us. So, Robo Burners, over to you for the first question this week.
Okay, so our first question comes in from Adrian. He's a left-arm medium-pace bowler, and he's saying that he's got a very good slower ball. He's saying that it loops and drops late and cuts into the right-hander. He can also put it on a good line and length, maybe 7 or 8 times out of 10. His question, however, is that when is a good point in a spell to bring it into play? So he's asking, when should he execute these variations on his stock delivery?
Well, I am going to say that the basic principle of any kind of variation is to bowl it when the batsman is least able to deal with it. Anything that disrupts the batsman's rhythm is a good thing for a bowler to be able to do. So the timing of it, as the question said, the timing of it is you've got early on when the batsman's not used to you at all, or later on when he is getting used to you. Either of those is a good time to try it, because the batsman's going to be expecting one thing and you do something else. And if it's a good slower ball, as you mentioned, Adrian, it is a good one and he can hit the target most of the time, then it's going to disrupt the batsman and it could cause a problem. You've got to look at the match situation as well. Slower balls can also be put out of the park if you're not too careful. So make sure you're looking at the match situation as well as your particular duel with the bowler, but I would say it's when the batsman least expect it, Gareth.
Yeah, I think that's a good rule to sort of stick by, to be honest. I'm a massive fan of not just slower balls, but also just varying your pace a little bit. And I think sometimes bowlers generally go between their top pace and then chucking in a slower ball. And that can also become quite predictable because every bowler does it. And particularly on flat wickets, I find that one of the better tactics is to vary your pace very subtly rather than going from your top pace down to your bottom pace, which is what most bowlers do. So an example of that came in Sri Lanka in 2008, where I analysed how Chiminder Bass and Kulasekara and Fernando bowled their seamers. And what was happening was they weren't just going top whack and then chucking in a slower ball, or going the other way around and bowling loads of slower balls and then chucking in a quicker one. They were working up and down a range of about 7 or 8 mile an hour, which meant that the length ball that you talk about here was arriving at the contact zone at completely different times. Very subtly, but it was adjusting where the batter was making contact with the ball on a ball-by-ball basis. And obviously, on particular flatter wickets, where you're not going to be getting those nicks behind the stumps to the keeper and to the slip fielders a lot, you're most likely to have your attacking fielders in front of the stumps, on the drive or wherever the case may be. And making a batter change their contact area on a regular basis is going to bring those guys into the game a lot, and also brings in your quicker ball to then go for an LBW or bowled. So whilst I love the fact that your slower ball is a good one and it lands on a length, and you've talked about the opportunity to put it in when the batter is least expecting it, I would also say that one of the most underutilised tactics in bowling is to vary the pace very subtly, then to use your top pace and your bottom pace around that, rather than what we generally do is have a really consistent pace that the batter gets used to, and then we chuck in something completely different. So if you can amalgamate all of that into a bowling strategy, particularly on flat wickets, then you're going to become a more effective operator for your captain and for your team.
I think we've expanded on the original question there by saying it's not just about the slow ball, it's all about the variations in pace. But use it when the batsman's least expecting it is a good general rule, and then all that
it's
extra
a good rule of thumb.
Yeah,
definitely.
Then all that extra advice from Gareth is something for you to go into the nets and work on those more subtle variations of pace. Thinking a bit more like a spinner, I suppose, is the executive summary of that.
Do you know what? I've never thought of it that way, but that's actually a good way of doing it. Obviously, you're going to have to be careful the way that you term that with some of your fast and nasty bowlers. that might impinge on their ego somewhat. But as a coach, and when you've said that, that actually has opened my mind to some different terminology and different language patterns, which is good.
Okay, back to Robo Burners for the second question.
Our next question comes in from Salman. He wants to know the secrets of winning matches. He's saying that every week they've not been able to win a match for over 3 months now. So he's obviously getting very frustrated as the captain, and he's generally accepting all responsibility in this matter. And he's saying either the opponents are either too good or his own boys are too weak. But he's saying that they just lose by the faintest of margins every week. So he's just wanting to know what he can do to up the ante and get his boys across the line. What do you reckon, Gareth?
Yeah, brilliant. I totally understand your frustrations. You know, 3 month losing streaks aren't fun, but I'm going to talk to you about a bit of my life that taught me some lessons in this. And I was an under 11 footballer playing for Ventnor Football Club, who were one of the best sides on the Isle of Wight, which didn't sound very good, but they were. and I was number two goalkeeper, which might make some people laugh that have seen that I'm only 5'6½, but I was. And I wasn't bad. And I couldn't get a game in the team because Ventnor were quite good. So I moved to Sandown and Shanklin Football Club, who record throughout the years had been that they'd lost every game for the previous 6 years.
Ouch.
And generally got beaten 20+ nil a week. So my first game that I played, we were 9-0 down with 2 minutes to go, which represented something quite special. And the ball got crossed. We're playing against Benbridge. The ball got crossed and I shouted my ball, keeper's ball, to my centre-back, who duly bent down, picked the ball up and gave it to me, thus giving away a penalty.
Oh, my God.
And I happened to save the penalty and we lost 9-0. And we celebrated the fact that we'd only lost 9-0 because it was the first time in the club's history that they'd lost anything other than 20-0+. And we started to build on that. And don't get me wrong, we used to get some absolute hammerings, but we used to set ourselves realistic targets. And about 3 years later, we won our first game. And that was a very, very special moment for all of the kids that had grown up together being battered, but getting better and better as they went through, narrowing the victory, scoring some goals, keeping the goal difference at the end of the year in less than a thousand. All of those sort of things became our focus. And eventually we won a game and then we went to a festival and we won two games. And all I'd say to you here is if you can focus on a very small part of your game that you think you can make a big difference in, whether it be batting 50 overs or increasing the amount of dot balls or maidens that you have when you bowl, once you start to do that on a regular basis, you then shift your focus to something else whilst maintaining your performance in that previous area. And all of a sudden, those little losses that you explain to yourself turn into wins, and those wins turn into bigger wins. And it just sounds to me that you're taking the responsibility as captain for the result on your shoulders, which is only right and proper. That is your role, but you're taking it on too much. Instead of actually looking at the way that you can break down performance, get your performance right, which in turn will look after the result. A great book by a guy called Bill Walsh is that the score always takes care of itself. And if you look after the little things in life, they generally come back and give you the results at the end. So shift your focus, my friend. Use my under 11 Sandown and Shanklin example as an impetus for that, and off you go.
That is an inspiring story. It's that whole process versus outcome thing again, isn't it? You know, the idea of if you work on the things that you can do, and then don't look at the score too often, then the score will be a result of the process. The outcome will be a result of the process. So that's a common thing with coaching, and it's a common thing with being a captain as well, I guess.
It is. And, you know, that W and that L in the end column can be a distractor, can't it? And so that would be my answer, really, is to just shift your focus. And it doesn't have to be for the whole of the season, Selman, at all. It just has to be for a short period of time, and make sure that the focus that you've got in games is the focus that you're working on in any practice sessions that you may have together. And the focus of the conversations that you might have in your small groups as you go about your daily lives, but inevitably mean that you bash into each other every now and again, or you have a phone call, or you send each other an email. If you make that your focus, that those performance gains your focus, and I guarantee you that we'll stop talking about your 3 month losing streak and we'll start talking about some other things in a very short period of time.
Self-belief is another important part of that. My team this year has had a rocky time. We didn't win a game for most of the season. Then we had we were bottom of the league, and then we had a large points fine imposed on us for fielding an illegible player. And after that, when everyone thought, well, that's it, we've been relegated, everybody seemed to relax. And the last five games. We won three. One was abandoned, and the other one we were just 2 wickets away from winning that one as well. The transformation was complete from one end, completely no belief, going out thinking we're unable to put a total, we're unable to chase a total, we're unable to bowl sides out. Everybody thought that. That was the talk around the club, to suddenly turning around, because it was almost like it was a lost cause. We all said, oh, well, let's just go out and enjoy it. We went out and enjoyed it and played the best cricket for about 3 years and had our best run for about 3 years as well. So just goes to show the difference that a little bit of confidence makes to a team as well.
Absolutely. So I reckon you've got some answers there, Salman. And it all starts with you, mate. And we'll be fascinated to hear how you go.
That's enough mailbox stuff. Let's go over to Daisy Cutter in the Pitch Vision newsroom for this week's headlines.
Thank you, guys. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter, and this is the Pitch Vision news. ICC, Global Cricket Academy in Dubai are set to have Pitch Vision installed permanently. Already a fixture at the Elite Academy, Pitch Vision will now become an underfloor fixture for all teams that pass through the centre. Sam Charnley, the Academy lead analyst, commented it would be great to have Pitch Vision under the carpet for ease and allowing players to practice naturally. The Pitch Vision interactive spotlight turns to boundaries this week. Users Stratus 75 and Keoli 875 have passed the 200 runs in boundary mark with 206 each. But they can't rest on any laurels as Kershaw sits right behind them on 194 runs. Meanwhile, Kumar A78 is the power hitter with 47 sixes since January 1st. Beat that, Chris Gayle. And finally, an experimental technology is being used in this very podcast. As you've already heard, the revolutionary RoboBurner sounds in every way like the real-life version. The only difference is the brushed aluminium unibody and the ability to arrive to the show recordings on time. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
Thank you very much, Daisy, and we'll speak to you again next week. Daisy Cutter there, of course. Amazing where she gets her stories from. I've never been able to work out. She must have some kind of inside track on the Pitch Vision world.
Just got sharp blades for those daisies. That's what it is. She's on the buzzer. Yeah. Sharp as hell, our Daisy.
She is. And what about this ICC news?
Oh, fantastic stuff. One of the world's premium academies. It's an absolute manifesto of cricketing brilliance in Dubai. And fortunately, they're going to be putting our Pitch Vision system under floor, so it's permanent. So guys can come in and out, and for all the touring teams that are using their facilities there, it becomes really easy for them to play on Pitch Vision and capture some data, you know, in and amongst their standard training and games. They can just quickly pop on the system, get some feedback, and then off they go, and they can obviously use that around the world with the dual capability of our membership scheme.
Yeah, such a powerful tool, such a well established method of coaching is that, you know, instant feedback, being able to give instant feedback. And we talk about it a lot when we talk about Pitch Vision, but it's absolutely the core of the system, and people at ICC are going to get the full benefit of that. So great news. For 60 seconds each week, one of the members of the team gets a chance to rant about whatever's on their mind without interruption and hopefully without much hesitation either. And I know Berners rarely has a hesitation. So you're on the soapbox this week, Berners. 60 seconds. Over to you.
Well, often my rants are relevant to the amateur player. And this week, one that I've picked up throughout the season, but it's batting the overs, using up all of your allocated overs. I think quite often We can be guilty of going a little bit too hard in the early stages of the game and not keeping men in the tank when the ball gets a bit older and the field gets spread. Generally, it's easier to score at the back end of the game. And a real sin in the shorter format, obviously, 20 overs, not batting those 20 overs and being able to apply pressure right at the end when often, you know, fielders, bowlers are wilting somewhat. You've really got to look at those key times to actually build a competitive score. And there was a prime example the other day with England where they didn't bat their allocated overs. And, you know, in that format, every ball counts, let alone overs. So bat your overs, keep men in the locker, and go hard late.
And that is the end of the show for this week. It's been a cracker, as always. But before we go, a couple of little things. The first one, Gareth, is you need to decide on the winner of this week's competition. The prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had two questions, one from Adrian about his slower ball and one from Salman about his slow ability to win games. Which one did you prefer?
Well, I reckon this is the toughest call that we've ever had, because those questions, I think we've been on fire today, I'll be brutally honest, and those that know me know that I'm prone to slapping myself on the back, but I'm also slapping you on the back here, coach, so well done. So it's a real toughie, and I'm going to go with Salman's today, but I promise you, it's the toughest call that I've ever had to make on this, so apologies go out, I'm afraid, but Salman wins.
Unlucky, Adrian. Most times you probably would have won, but don't let that put you off. Send in another question. If it's equally as good, then you'll have an equally as good chance of winning a prize. And congratulations to you, Salman, for winning the online coaching course. Now, Robo Burners, let's switch him on and ask him, how would you get in touch with the show if you want to send in your question and win the prize of the online coaching course?
They can give us a call. Our number is 020-323-97543. Or they can drop us an email, and the address for that is coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, thank you very much, Robo Burners. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter. We've changed our Twitter handle. It's still Pitch Vision Academy, but if you want to @PitchVisionAcad, then you'll find us there. The old account still works, but try the new one, please. And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. And if you want to subscribe to the show, then I highly recommend you do. It is an iTunes subscription. If you go over to iTunes to search for Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find us in there. And if you want to use any other podcatching program, go to pitchvision.com/academy and follow the podcast link at the top in the green bar there, and it'll give you the feed details. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, and until then, have a good week. Cheers, Burners. Cheers, Gareth.
That's a good, despite the fat burner. I quite like Robo Burners.
Maybe you should do it every week.